can read it this.
All right, thank you. This time, Dr. Martha Sayles will present for us, and then we'll have something from Jean-Marc.
Good morning. I am honored to highlight and present another awesome and amazing student organization today, one of our centers, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Head for introduction and presentation.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm Andrew Head. I'm the director of the Center for Financial Success. I'm also an associate professor of finance in the College of Business. I'm excited to talk about this today. It's been about just over 10 years, actually, since we were officially approved by the Board of Regents at the University Center, and it's amazing how much we've done in that time. I joined WKU coming from a background as a financial planner. I still do some of that on the side, but I really wanted to get into higher education because I wanted to do things exactly like this, to try to move the needle a little bit on financial literacy and help students in our personal financial planning program and CFP Board Registered Education program become better advisors to folks, get more experience working with their peers and like leading their own meetings and that sort of thing. And it's been just so much fun watching this grow. So we have three primary delivery modes and like focus areas. Our bread and butter is our peer financial coaching center. I go back. This is our group from last year. We have a lot of graduates and turnover from year to year, but we tend to have about sort of eight financial coaches at a given moment, plus a full-time staff member, Zach Jones, who can't be here today. He's finishing out his last few precious days of paternity leave. And then I'm a part-time faculty director. So they do the primary day-to-day. Like, it's amazing how much the students actually are in charge of running most of the show. Like, we give them guidance and sort of point them in the right directions and point them to the right sort of resources and so forth. But day-to-day, they're mostly running the show. Haley Wise is one of our seniors here, one of our lead coaches. We'll tell you a little bit more about some of this stuff here in a second. We have financial literacy outreach. We make a lot of presentations. We made something in the neighborhood of like 70 presentations just last semester. We wear them out. We're heading into our fourth summer personal financial planning summer camp, which is, again, one of these things that's kind of an amazing experience. So talking a little bit about our coaching program for a second, we focus on a number of different areas. We try to make sure that anybody that comes to us like can leave with something that they've learned about their financial situation. Sometimes it's just like, hey, you're actually pretty well together. Like that validation can be pretty valuable to some folks. But we're dealing with a lot of spending plans. We work with a lot with various budgeting software and help folks, primarily students, but some faculty and staff, get their budgets together. And we tend to, even with students coming in to do their like a help get help with a budget or very other like a specific other kind of budget, we will make sure we go through their WKU bill with them and look at their student loans, make sure that they're not making any mistakes there, like getting some guidance on that. We also put together like a 4-year spending plan form, a financial analysis form that says if you continue like this, this is what after graduation is going to look like for you as far as your student loan burden and that kind of thing. We do a lot of career reality check stuff with them. Like we're never trying to talk people out of majors or anything like that. We just want to make sure that they know what their financial expectations should be after they graduate. And we help them putting together a post-graduation budget, helping sometimes selecting employee benefits, making sure they navigate the health insurance plans are being offered or the 401k that they've never heard of until this moment, helping them understand what some of that kind of stuff is. We do some stuff with credit building, of course. That's a topic we delve into, but we're a little bit contrarian there in that we're not like encouraging people to go out and start building credit by using credit cards all the time. And a lot of times it's a little bit of like a, hey, like let's pump the brakes a little bit on this and maybe focus on some other areas first. But you know, those that have reached a certain stage, we will help them build credit like a champ. And then we also work, this isn't just like a one-time thing. One of the things we regularly do is follow up with our student clients from semester to semester. So like we have our students use like industry leading client relationship management software, just like the financial planning firms use, to track our clients. And then like each semester we'll have, like at the beginning of the semester, they'll reach out to their previous clients and say, hey, what's going on? What can we help you with now? So it's an ongoing relationship. Our outreach program, we said make many, many presentations to Greek organizations, to all sorts of different classes, ranging from like freshman seminar, university experience type classes, all the way up to like senior seminars for like art students and for graduate students in other programs and whatnot. We tend to keep this interactive with a number of like poll questions embedded in the slides, so there's a lot of participation. A lot of students get to find out just how much they don't know about like personal finance during one of these settings. We tend to tailor these to the individuals that we're trying to give these to. So it's a very dynamic environment there. Like we are constantly trying to retool our presentations and figure out what might work best with a particular audience. And then we got this summer camp. This has been a really great way for us to like to build recognition of our program, of what it is that we do, as well as like really engaging with a group of about 30 to 40 students each summer. It's kind of funny, like we didn't know what to expect with a personal finance camp. I mean, it's a personal finance summer camp. So like at first we're like, okay, we're gonna do this, like, oh my goodness, what kind of dorks are gonna show up? And it was like, honestly, like it's been fun because we have a lot of like, there's a group of students that are like really excited about it. We discovered that probably a solid two-thirds to three-quarters of them are there because they want to get away from their families for a few nights and hang out on campus. But they like the idea of actually learning something practical. And we have our student coaches serve as what we call them, like camp counselors over there. They have teams of about five students each that they shepherd through the week where they are very bless our hearts, staying in the dorms with them overnight, making sure that nothing like reaches any news channels or nothing ever worthwhile. But it's been like they have a case that they work on throughout the week that they actually present to any folks, and so we like they're helping them with that throughout the process. We've had several of them have ended up coming to WKU as a result of this program. Can kind of get a sense of like how much we're growing and have grown over the last 5-10 years. It originally started out as like the Center for Financial Success was basically this guy. And then I would like rope a student into certain things on a regular basis. We got some initial funding to hire a student more of like on a regular basis from Service One Credit Union early on. And we were able to have like one student kind of working with me 20 hours a week, but then the student would graduate. We finally got a little additional grant money along the way that allowed us to, I took a sort of a chance and said, hey, we don't have the money for a whole lot of years doing this, but we've got enough to see if we can get, what would happen if we have three students at once? And like, that's when you start to see these numbers jump quite a bit. And we've gotten to a point where like, that one of those three students that we hired is actually now my assistant director. And things have just continued to grow. We've got, like I said, eight students doing this. They handle, on an average semester, like anywhere from 30 to 50 plus like one-on-one meetings with students and other individuals. These are just a handful of the groups that we work with here. We have a good relationship with a lot of the university experience instructors who will bring us in and do at least a one-time presentation, but oftentimes like a couple of presentations where you're giving sort of a like some marching orders, and then they got to come back and review some of that with them. We teach personal finance, Finance 161, and one of the really fun things about that is they have the option to work with a financial coach as part of that class. So not just learn about personal finance, but give them every opportunity possible to get their financial affairs in order, get their ducks in a row after that class. Business LLC, we've started working with the LifeWorks organization recently it's involved with Kelly Autism Program and those groups. We've got Dynamic Leadership Institute that part of the leadership certification process, that they've got to come in and make sure that their own house is in order, financially speaking. It's hard to be a leader when you've got a train wreck going on behind you. So, and then we've been working with Trio, and this time next week, we've got, I think, 200 students coming to a personal finance event that we're going to be helping put on for them here in DSU, actually, and any number of others. We have any number of partners that sort of push, encourage, or require students to come meet with us. That's where a lot of the magic, honestly, happens. We can make presentations all day, but it's when we finally get a student sitting down with a peer coach, they'll open up. We can discover ways that we can actually help them. And it's been just amazing hearing some of the stories. I would like Kaylee here to maybe talk a little bit about her experience.
So I'm a senior here, and I'm one of our senior coaches, and then I'm also in charge of our outreach program at the center. So all those presentations, I'm always bugging people, hey, come let me talk. I promise I'll make it worth your time. And from that, we've had a couple students come in, and we've really been able to make a big impact. The impact definitely goes both ways with our coaches and the students. So I'll start with some of our students because it's really our bread and butter, what we want to do. So as you kind of mentioned, we're trying to get them in. No student wants, very few students, I'll say, are like, I want to go talk about my money. It's scary. No one wants to think about it. And so a lot of times just being able to kind of maybe incentivize them to come in, it kind of gets the ball rolling for them. So with these three stories from last semester, these students, they really, a lot of them came in for extra credit or they just heard about it. They're like, I'm interested. So this first student, she was probably the biggest, I'm so glad you came in your first semester. So she was a first generation student. She set up paying for school all by herself. She had no one there to guide her. And so she just came in and she wanted to talk about a budget. She didn't even know how she was paying for school. And so we set up her budget and we're like, hey, why don't we just check your bill? It's something we like to do. And we get on her bill and we find out she is taking a loan at 17% and not taking any federal aid at all. And she had no idea that federal aid was even a thing. And so with her, we were able to talk with her, be like, hey, maybe we want to switch here. And over the next 4 years, we counted out, we saved her over $24,000. So what we're doing with these students is we're able to keep them in school and graduate without that worry. These next year are kind of the same thing with student loans. That's really our big thing we're catching nowadays, is they're taking loans that they're not realizing they're taking, or they're taking it and they have other ways to pay for school. So we're really making a difference in helping these students stay in school. Just these three people, I did the math because I was like, I like numbers. And we saved just these three students $52,000 over the next 10-year period. That doesn't even account for if they didn't pay their loan off in time or anything. So really making a difference. And then that other side is we're helping our coaches. It might not seem as much because there's only eight of us at a time, but the difference this program has made on me and even other coaches has really been unmatched. They trust us to lead these meetings, and that's huge. A lot of people going into financial planning, no one's going to let them just go talk to a client, but they trust us. We're allowed to talk to them. We learn those skills, and it's really been super beneficial. These are some previous coaches, but I will say, I'm sure this is a statistic I'm making up, but 100% of us have landed great jobs just because employers see that and they're coming to us. I've never applied for a job. Everyone just comes to me like, I've heard about you. You've shown all these great skills, and so just being confident and having those people come to me has been huge. And so, yeah, we have some other previous alumni, and they all say the same thing. So just working here has been so beneficial and impactful to me, too, because I'm doing what I'm passionate about while gaining skills for my career, too.
It's been the impact that we see on, like Kaylee said, on both sides has just been phenomenal. It's like, it's really, like, that's what I wanted to see happen here. Like, we've got an applied learning sort of process here that's actually benefiting other folks. We've got plans to, you know, grow throughout the future, like eventually establish satellite offices around campus and then maybe around the community. But we've been very intentional about making sure that we've got our own home in order here. Like, we have not gone off campus, for example, to offer a whole lot of advice except in very specific circumstances, because we're not quite there yet where we figured we've got our entire student body taken care of. Then we figured out, we're in front of 1,500 people last semester, and we want that to double over the course of time. It's continuing to grow, and the amount of the student impact that we get to see is really rewarding. Any questions?
So, terrific program. Listening to it, it occurs to you that you'd like to think this was happening at the high school level to some degree. And as this program matures, maybe it can be a real draw to Western with some more outreach, or at least awareness that you all are doing this type of thing.
And we've been fortunate, and we've been expanding some of our dual credit offerings now. Mm-hmm. Like, now that Kentucky actually has some personal financial literacy learning objectives for their high school students, we've been able to link in with a bunch of teachers and schools to help provide those courses. But there's all sorts of other opportunity there for sure.
The personal finance summer camp, is that incoming freshmen that come to that?
And that is rising juniors and seniors in high school.
In high school?
Yeah. You have offered, freshmen.
Is it offered locally? How far are you going?
I think the furthest student, we had someone come from Scott County. That's where I'm from, so it's about 2.5 hours away. I'd say a lot are local, though, but they kind of range in a little bubble.
We got some from, like, the northern Kentucky area. We've had some from out near, Monticello and, like, out the Duke area. So it's a fairly good footprint.
How are you advertising that?
Primarily to, like, guidance counselors and high school business teachers, and there's some high school personal finance teachers and some of those individuals. And then, there's a few other organizations. I'm not as involved in quite some of the marketing of this summer camp as my partner Zach is.
It would be great if we could meet with every student individually that have these huge loans and get them with someone who could help them, because I feel like a lot of them don't even understand. They sign on a dotted line and don't realize what they're going to end up having to pay at the end of their education. So, yeah, that's great. I would think we would need a lot more than 8 counselors.
We do, and it really isn't, like, that's one of the nice things about it. It's not an expensive program. We're primarily people kind of thing. We don't need a lot of technology. It's about $7,000 a year for one of our coaches to work here. So, scaring up resources over the course of time, we've been growing incrementally. But yeah, but definitely, we would like. I'd love. My goal would be probably 15 to 20 coaches over the next 5 to 10 years.
Has there been, like, any discussion at all about, like, I know as a student, like, you're pretty much required once a semester to meet with your advisor just to do your academic coaching. I think it would be in great interest in the university to look into making students be required, maybe not once a semester, because I know you guys have limited numbers on the capacity of your coaching abilities, but I think it would be really cool if we could have students at least maybe once a year, once in their 4 years, meet with you guys, because I know there's a lot of students that I feel like there's a stigma of, like, maybe come to you guys, it might be a little bit scary for a few students, but if you made it required that all their peers are doing it and that it's something that's destigmatized and, like, you know, widely available to the student body, I think it would greatly benefit from that. Absolutely. I think if there's funding available for that, it should definitely be looked into.
One of the great things is you came and presented to the Staff Senate. We really appreciate that because as frontline, so staff are frontline workers with students and we employ students. We also see some of the challenges that they have. And this group and how approachable they are gives us a way to refer people that we see in trouble or potentially in trouble, and also people that are really trying to grasp independence for the first time, where they have left home, they have a job here, they're trying to help offset some of the costs and be responsible with their money. So we really appreciate everything. And, you know, you're homegrown. You have 21 years from your first degree here at the university. So I appreciate you willing to stay and in the pedagogy role kind of help educate students and others on this campus. I think it's an extremely valuable program. When you talk about $7,000, I mean, the maximum amount of student, let's say $10 an hour, right? So if you work here on campus every hour that you can as a student, all year long, you can make about $9,600. This is a great deal for an investment in a resource. So I think it's something that should expand, and I think with students and the amount of impact that they're trying to have on their own finances, it's a great service.
Yeah. It's not a stretch to think that this ought to be part of Dean Bosta's wellness program.
We actually have collaborated with them. So our, but yes, that is good.
If I comment to... you know, given from where a good portion of our students are coming as the first in their families to go to college or are Pell eligible, helping them figure out not just how to do college, but how to do life after college, it is so important. They may not have gotten in high school the lessons they need, and I've asked the provost over and over again around, I appreciate that we have folks who learn how to do algebra here, and that's in lots of different ways. I don't know how much algebra I used after graduating. But what we really also need to make sure folks get is checkbook math. So I appreciate on the debt side how important that is. But I'm mindful of a lesson that I learned because of a similar kind of interaction about compound interest and time mitigating risk. And what do you do when you leave college? If you take one thing away, that's what they need to know the day they graduate, because they're going to be making choices about 401k, and that choice is so important. Not to be too conservative, not to turn it down because you don't have enough dollars to live. And I'm personally thankful that I got that when I was 22 and 24 years old. I wonder if our students have that too.
So as one of the continuing to talk with state legislators about their concern about how we're indoctrinating students, I've spoken to them about what we're competing now against is TikTok. And I'm sure you see this, of where our students are getting their financial lessons from TikTok. And there's some great people out there. Kyla Scanlon, for those of you that don't know, she'll be way over your heads what she's talking about. But the misinformation that you're having to counter, and you know, you talk about the stigma that the students might have, I would point out that over the years, I have sent many faculty members to meet with Mr. Head, not just the understanding our various healthcare plans, our retirement choices. We have people who have brand new PhDs who have never thought about any of the things and the choices they have to make, and that is a service that they offer as well. So yeah, I see the amount of work they do that is a retention effort. We talk about all the successes in retention. We've seen the data that shows financial concerns is one of the biggest reasons why people leave. Yes, and so I believe that, you know, this is certainly something that an investment in will pay off in this institution as well. So,
thank you for everything you do. I think all of us would like to see this grow. And anything we can do to make people get an education and think they can afford it, you know, that's what it needs to do.
Thank you.
This is great.
Thank you all.
We have enrollment and retention of that.
Well, good morning. During the past couple of weeks of transition, Martha and I have had several meetings with folks across the Hill and teams talk about the work that they're doing, the goals that they're pursuing. And for those of us lucky enough to be up close to this work for the past few years, it's sometimes easy to zoom in on one of those metrics that hasn't moved as much as we want it to, or get lost in a graph or a table somewhere. But it's also important that while we always chase that next big goal, that we also take some time from time to time, and it's also motivating to do so, to celebrate those successes that we've had along the way. You all recall last month we announced the highest ever first to second semester persistence rate since the university began tracking these data. And this is a good opportunity to pause and look at some of the ways that the metrics have changed, that student success has been affected since we launched the strategic plan. So this morning, Dr. Helbig, Tuesday Helbig, who serves as Director of Institutional Research, is someone who is always there to answer questions and to also remark on what questions we should be asking, and has a tremendous amount of institutional knowledge, is going to step us through some of those changes over the past few years. Dr. Helbig.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for letting me present good news. So we're going to talk about enrollment and retention and graduation. And what you can see here is our degree-seeking students, which this past fall, this was the first time since fall of 2010 that we saw an increase year over year in that number. And so I want you to understand that that is a really incredible thing. One of the reasons that these numbers have gone down so much is in fall of 2016, we had 1,100 international students. We now have 138, and so that has decreased quite a bit. Another thing that has impacted these numbers is something that we did. We made a choice, and we did it strategically. When President Cavoni got here, he had us look at student success. And what we found was we were admitting students that almost had zero chance of graduating with a degree. So what we did at that point was we increased our admissions criteria. And when we did that, we knew that was going to decrease our incoming class. But we also knew that those students had a good chance of being successful. But what happens with that, when you do that for one class, the next year you have the smaller class and then the new smaller class. And then in 4 years, you've got a smaller number of students. And so this is kind of like compounding interest. It kind of compounds year over year. So that the fact that we went up 200 students this past year is really huge, because we are really kind of trying to push that ball up the hill. There we go. So we also increased in our first-time, first-year students last year. And so that's another good indicator that we are kind of turning the corner on that. One thing I didn't mention was this spring, we are also up again. So we are up 238 students over last spring, so that trend is continuing. So that's good. It wasn't just a blip. And so one of the ways that we can increase, and I think that has led to this increase in our students, is looking at our first-year retention. And so if you look at this, we have kind of been creeping up. You can see in 2020, that was down, but that is, to me, that's the COVID year. In 2020, a lot of students came to school that wouldn't normally have come to school, and then you can see that they left the next year. So you can see this trend. We were up to 78% this past year, and that is the highest retention rate that we have ever had at WKU. And it wasn't just overall. We've done a really good job on increasing the retention rate of our underrepresented minority. They started out at 57.8% 6 years ago. They're now up to 74.7%. That's a big increase. Our low-income students have gone from 60.2% up to 69.8%. Last year, we actually even met our goal for next year, so we're right on track. For first-generation students,
They were 60.7%. They're now at 68.6%. So they have also increased. And another group of students that we've put a lot of time and effort into, really revitalizing our learning, our living and learning communities. And you can see that their fall to spring retention is higher than those that do not participate in them. And then their fall to fall retention continues to be higher than not. So the ultimate goal is not just to have a lot of students and not to get them here just 1 year, but it is to graduate them and to, you know, have them earn a bachelor's degree. And so our six-year graduation rate has increased from 50.7% up to 56.1%, and that's a good increase. What people do not think about sometimes is when we're calculating our most recent, like this most recent graduation rate, we're talking about students that started in 2017. And a lot has happened since 2017. So you really have to go way back. Let me go back real fast to, I can't go back. I just stopped it. I'm sorry. Help. Let me go back to the retention rates overall real fast. So here you can see in 2017, our one-year retention rate was 71.5, and it's pretty much continued to go up over time. So what we're really expecting is to see our graduation rates continue to go up. So that's this group right here that we just measured their six-year graduation rate. And so I would expect those to continue to go up over time. Some interesting things to note. Here, this is our four-year, our five-year, and our six-year graduation rate. And so if you look at this past year, students that started in 2017, their six-year graduation rate was 56.1. If you look to the students that started in 2018, we can measure their fifth-year graduation rate, and that is already higher than the six-year graduation rate right now. So next year, our six-year graduation rate is going to go up. So that's a good thing. Something else that you will notice is that our four-year graduation rate has gone from 28.5% up to 42.4% this year, and then in a couple of years it's going to be 45.1%. That means students are getting out of here in 4 years. Another way to look at that is if you look at our average years to a bachelor's degree, in 6 years that's gone from 4.38 years down to 4.06 years. So students, that's the average. So a lot of students are getting out of here before 4 years. And so, that's exactly what we want. We want them to get in here and get out as soon as they can and get a good experience and a good degree. But that also does come back around to this enrollment issue. If they're only staying here for 3 years, then we have that extra year that we used to have them that we don't anymore. So that kind of makes that trying to get the enrollment number up even harder. But this is the ultimate goal, so you know we got to take the win. Any questions?
I'd like to add a little bit of context to it as well, because I asked the question why we were admitting that group of students as I was entering the organization, who 80% of whom were gone by the sophomore year. Their average debt load was $4,000, and they essentially had a 0% chance of getting a college degree. And I asked why we were admitting them, and the answer I got back was revenue. And I said to that person, you will never say that again. And the next person that says it to me is gone, because that's wrong, and we're not going to do that anymore. And so we had conversations around what's the number, what's the choice that we make in the best interest of those students. And if we're not going to admit them, how do we get them to community college? But if we do admit them, how do we do this in a way that shapes the class? Because it connected directly to another conversation I had, and it was actually during faculty presentation as I was being considered for the presidency. And I remember talking about the importance of retention and getting the retention rate up, which creates revenue stability, and in turn increases graduation rate. And when we started talking about 80%, 60%, people looked at me and others and said, you can't do that. Why not? I sat across from someone who said, you can't set a target that high, we'll never make it. Because look at where we've been. And just because we've done something historically doesn't mean we can't have interventions and change. And so this entire campus has bought in to not just student success, but student excellence. And not just excellence among some students, but excellence for every student in what we deliver and what they accomplish. And these numbers, that's a national story. Institutions don't do this, but we have. And so it's a great opportunity for us as a university, as a community, to pause, to celebrate, and to know that the goals that we've set, while challenging, are absolutely attainable. And to Tuesday, who, as I was entering, I shared this with her this morning, I don't think she knows I'm going to share it public, I was looking at the numbers, and they didn't make any sense to me. I couldn't figure it out. And I remember asking her, help, like, tell me the question I need to ask you so this makes sense. And she said, you need to disaggregate all of these by these variables. I'm like, okay, well, you disaggregate all of these by all the variables. And then all of a sudden, it was clear what we had been doing. And for that, Tuesday, thank you for your leadership and your continued press on this. And again, just something remarkable for our university to celebrate.
You know, and along with that, of course, has been the revision to curriculum and budget, which was necessary to get to this point. But the thing that's in the back of all our minds now is, you know, 2008, 18 years from now, 2026. So how are we gonna maintain that here when the cliff happens?
Absolutely. I'll touch on that. So, you know, as we continue to think about the ways in which we're engaging high school students along the way, it's about telling our success as an institution and ensuring that they understand that this is a place where they can come in and they will be wrapped up and they will have those supports that have been systemized that will allow them to be successful. It's telling the stories of these students who've been in here today, talking about their hands-on and applied experiences along the way. And so as we look at our, I don't want to say WKU's insulated from the demographic changes that are coming at all, but if we look at our immediate area too and focus on those students in South Central Kentucky and what's expected to happen with the population here, we also have the potential to not be as affected by these demographic changes as some other areas of the country.
It makes it all the more important that we keep doing these strategic maneuvers.
I'll also add the focus on making sure that we're recruiting a diverse entering class is important. The students who have typically gone to college, there are fewer of them. Students who have typically not gone to college, there are more of them. And so we have to tell a compelling story, but also show how this experience changes the trajectory of their lives, their families' lives, because WKU will, again, not look the same as it used to look in another decade. We're going to continue to be more diverse. Our region is going to be more diverse. It means we have to support students, and we got to make it compelling for them, particularly if they're going to make a $20,000, $25,000 investment in themselves that creates a $2 million return on that investment over a lifetime of income. And right now, the largest group of students who apply to WKU don't go anywhere. 62% of our applicant pool doesn't pursue post-secondary education. And as a commonwealth, we have to change that narrative for our future economic success.
So since we have you here, and you stepped into this role, could you give us a little taste of what we're looking like for this next year, the challenges you see, I mean, even just the FAFSA update and how that might, you know, the enrollment numbers, enrollment projections start the whole budget process. Very far along. So just any update you got for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So we continue to see some positive movement and momentum in the number of applications submitted. What is a little difficult this year to cast out is because of the changes in FAFSA, the quote-unquote simplification of the process that has complicated it much for our students, and the addition of the common application at WKU, we've seen a significant 25%+ increase in application volume, which is encouraging, but we also have to cast out what that's going to mean for yield numbers. So we're optimistic that the movement that we've seen over the past few years will continue and that the freshman class will be strong and equally academically qualified, but it's still those variables with question marks on exactly where yield will land because of the changes to FAFSA, the expansion of the applicant pool.
Yes. That was great. Very optimistic. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think that finishes the
okay.
Thank you. Is everybody ready to move on to executive or is ready for a break? Okay. All right. We'll take a break and move on to executive.